Hello and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the 29-year-old alleged Russian spy, Maria Butina, who appeared in federal court in Washington, D.C. today on charges of conspiracy and acting as an illegal foreign agent in the United States. Naveed Jamali, a senior fellow in the program on national security at the Foreign Policy Research Institute, who spent 3 years as a civilian double agent with the FBI and is the author of How to Catch a Russian Spy, The True Story of an American Civilian Turned Double Agent, joins us. We'll discuss Butina's efforts to infiltrate Republican politics under the guidance of Russian spies with support from an oligarch close to Putin and her use of a 56-year-old American activist in Republican and conservative circles who she lived with who provided political access. We'll explore how many tentacles there were and are to this ongoing Russian operation to influence our elections and look into evidence that Butina was being used as a lure by her paymaster, the Russian oligarch Alexander Torshin, to infiltrate the NRA so that Russian money could be funneled into the Trump campaign. And given that the Russians hacked into the private data of the DNC, Hillary Clinton, and her campaign manager, we will assess how that valuable information was likely used in real time by Americans yet to be identified, who would have given Trump the ability to not just read Hillary's private thoughts and strategies, but anticipate her every move and political message. Then we'll examine the efforts by Maria Butina to infiltrate a secret Christian political group of American Christian nationalists as well as gun rights groups to covertly promote Russian interests. Jeff Charlotte, a professor of English at Dartmouth College and author of The Family, The Secret Fundamentalism at the Heart of American Power, and C Street, The Fundamentalist Threat to American Democracy, joins us to discuss why Maria Butina was able to toss softball questions to candidate Trump and try to set up meetings with him and Putin. And since she tried to infiltrate both the NRA leadership and the leadership of the National Prayer Breakfast, which is organized by the Secretive Fellowship Foundation, we will investigate ties between America's religious right and Russia's religious right. Then finally, following a $5.1 billion fine levied against Google by the European Union, we'll look into why antitrust efforts in Europe are much more vigorous and effective than they are in the United States. Matt Stoller, a fellow at the Open Markets Institute who previously spent 6 years on Capitol Hill, most recently as a senior policy advisor to the Senate Budget Committee, joins us to discuss the lobbying power of the tech giants and the need for the American people to recognize the growing power of tech monopolies and the dangers posed to us from the business models of surveillance capitalism practiced by Google and Facebook. And joining us now is Naveed Jamali, who's a senior fellow in the Program on National Security at the Foreign Policy Research Institute. He spent 3 years as a civilian double agent with the FBI, then joined the U.S. Navy as a reserve intelligence officer, where he continues to serve. He is a regular contributor to MSNBC and The Daily Beast, and the co-author of How to Catch a Russian Spy, The True Story of an American Civilian Turned Double Agent. Welcome to Background Briefing, Naveed Jamali.
Thank you, Ian.
And it's pretty clear that the Russian spy has been caught, albeit a young woman who appears to be a protege of a oligarch, but apparently she did have a meeting with somebody that appears to be an intelligence officer attached to the Russian embassy in Washington, D.C. So what do you make of Maria Butina?
You know, Ian, this is something that I felt for a long time has been really misunderstood by both the press and frankly Americans. You know, it really goes back to this idea that the Russians have somehow cooled their heels at to close the Cold War, and anything can be further from the truth. It also, as we look at the indictments and we look at the 2016 Russian meddling in our election, there's this reaction that somehow this was done either behind a keyboard in Moscow or that this was some sort of cyber activity. But really what I believe, and where this ties into Maria, is that what the Russians rely on heavily, from my experience, is human beings. They rely on human assets. So Maria is, frankly, just the tip of the iceberg of what I know to be a fairly deep and robust network that the Russians have operating in the United States. It's just an example, the latest example, of someone who's operating in the United States under the direction.
Well, she apparently had an affair with actually lived with a Republican political activist, operative, if you will, in South Dakota, and even mentioned to her handler, I guess, who's a Russian oligarch. The Republican operative apparently is Paul Erickson, a 56-year-old veteran of conservative politics and pro-gun right activism from South Dakota. And she apparently expressed disdain for having to live with him to her handler, who's this Alexander Torshin, who's a Russian billionaire close to Putin, and apparently offered to have sex with somebody else in exchange to join an organization which looks like the NRA. So this, I know this is all very salacious, but is this sort of reminiscent of both the TV series The Americans and the Chapman story of the sleeper? And,
of course. And, of course. And, you know, the Anna Chapman story with this, you know, the this attractive redhead who was accused and eventually convicted of being an illegal, what the FBI calls an illegal, then returned to Moscow in a trade that involved, unfortunately, the gentleman who was who the Russians attempted to assassinate in the UK, and was then given given a medal. Look, at the end of the day, if we take the salacious details out, what we see here is a pattern of Russian aggression with the intent to infiltrate organizations, and this is nothing different than when you talk about Anna Chapman. What Anna Chapman was in her orders. Her orders were to, and the nine fellow illegals that were arrested alongside with her, her orders were to gain access to various parties with the intent of influence political activities. I mean, this is nothing new, Ian. This has been going on for a very long time, and it's just now, after 2016, that we take it seriously because we see the damage it can do. So, again, if you take the salacious details out of this, what we see here is a concerted effort by the Russians to use people and use whatever means necessary to gain access in order to manipulate and curry favor and, at the end of the day, really influence ways, influence decisions that are positive for Russia.
But it seems that the purpose of infiltrating the NRA had a lot to do with laundering Russian money that may well have gone into the Trump campaign. That seems to be what's going on here. They were using the NRA as a cutout so that they could fund the Trump campaign. That seems to be what Torshin was about. And she seems to be, since she works directly for Torshin, Maria Butina, she seems to be like his lure, if you will.
Well, there's a lot of question about oligarchs and where they fit in. Are they independent operators? Are they, in fact, pawns of Russian intelligence services? And the answer that I've gotten is it's a little bit of both. I mean, clearly their power and their what they've accumulated is owed in large part to Putin, and the fact that they're allowed to retain those trappings is, of course, because of Putin. So it's not a far fetch to believe, and as you saw here in the indictment, that oligarchs are often used by Russian intelligence services. So even if there is a tangible sort of criminal element of just straight money laundering, which I'm sure there are plenty of oligarchs who are involved in nefarious activities, it does not erase the larger claim that I made that the Russian intelligence services are really seeking to gain access and influence of various organizations. And look, you know, the fact of the matter is you keep seeing Russians popping up alongside various, you know, various people, and it's various meetings. You know, this is not by accident. This is not just for criminal enterprise. The fact that these people are connected to Russian intelligence services, to me, shows that there is a larger effort afoot, and it's one that I really believe comes down to the fact that, you know, Russia retains this ideology that sees the United States as their main adversary.
And, of course, the front group that she and Torshin were trying to set up is a Russian version of the NRA, and there's no such thing in Russia of the right to bear arms.
Right.
It's a police state, so there's no way in the world that they're going to allow average Russians to have the kind of arsenals that the average American has access to. And again, I'm speaking with Naveed Jamali, who's a senior fellow in the program on national security at the Foreign Policy Research Institute, who spent 3 years as a civilian double agent with the FBI, then joined the U.S. Navy as a reserve intelligence officer, where he continues to serve. He's a regular contributor to MSNBC and The Daily Beast, and he's the co-author of How to Catch a Russian Spy, The True Story of an American Civilian Turned Double Agent. So apparently, Butina was handed off, I guess, by the special counsel, Robert Mueller. So I take it he's got more important fish to fry. But there is a connection, is there not, to...
I'm certainly waiting for him to claim her. The other thing that's going to be interesting is if the Russians do, in fact, claim her and say that she's, much as they did with Anna Chapman. It is a curious development that it's not a Mueller indictment, but I would not be surprised if Mueller, comes back to this. This there was also very much a concern of her being a flight risk and wanting to retain her. So this may have just been the easiest course of action to keep her in the United States.
Well, apparently the FBI have received wiretaps obtained by the Spanish police that implicate Donald Trump Jr. in a plot to meet with Alexander Torshin, again, the oligarch who essentially employed or controlled Maria Butina. And apparently there was extensive wiretapping done of both Torshin and Alexander Romanov, who is convicted of money laundering in Spain. And he refers in these recordings, these wiretaps, he refers to Torshin as El Padrino, the godfather. Now, apparently, Russian intelligence tipped off Torshin just before the Spanish police were about to arrest him. So whatever the files of the Spanish police have on both Torshin and Alexander Romanov apparently been turned over to the FBI. So the assumption would be that that'd be something that would interest Mueller, wouldn't it?
Of course. And again, Bob Mueller is not interested in just your traditional white collar or organized crime, right? The assertion here is that there's a nexus that involves a conspiracy between the Russians and members of the Trump circle in regards to the 2016 election in support of Russia's interference operation. So all this stuff has to be driving to that one point. And I think that, again, we're not interested in Bob Mueller's not interested in exposing Russian oligarchs who are conducting criminal activity. Rather, he's interested in exposing the mechanisms that may have been used to carry out these acts. And I think that you're starting to see those things. And look, we don't what I will say about Donald Trump Jr. is at the end of the day, my experience with the Russians, that at some point we are going to learn that there were Americans who were involved. It's just inconceivable to me that a Russian operation to interfere in our elections would not use Americans. And again, it's a very important distinction to understand between targeting an American. So meeting with an American and having a conversation with an American, is not in of itself a crime. But the simple fact is today we have yet to learn of any of these Americans who had contact with either Russian intelligence officers or suspected Russian assets who voluntarily disclosed that meeting to the authorities. I mean, to me, that is such a moral, not only just a legal question, but it's certainly one that brings into question the morality and their loyalty to this country. I mean, this is when someone doesn't disclose something, to me, that is an indicator that they have something to hide. And I'm sure that those in law enforcement feel the same way. Now it's just a question of proving if they were, in fact, engaged in activities that rise to the level of criminal.
Well, obviously, some of the people that Maria Butina and Torshin met with, of course, there's a photograph out there of Torshin on one side of Governor Scott Walker of Wisconsin and Maria Butina on the other, all smiles. And now we learn a U.S. congressman out here in Orange County, California, Dana Rohrabacher, he had a meeting with her, had a dinner with her, in fact, although he claims that nothing went on. And he, of course, is under suspicion. In fact, his own colleagues in the House, including Kevin McCarthy, in a private meeting said, "I swear to God, Dana Rohrabacher and Donald Trump are on Putin's payroll," at which point immediately Paul Ryan said, don't go any further, shut up, and we'll keep it amongst ourselves. So those suspicions are out there. But I would hope, I mean, that we could get a kind of, you know, like a roadmap. Do you think that we're eventually going to see all of these intricate connections? Because the more of this stuff that turns up, the more you see a multifaceted Russian operation that basically had all kinds of different compartments to meddle with our elections, whether it was direct phishing and hacking, and or at least the potential to hack at the electoral level, the recruitment of the Green Party candidate Jill Stein, the use of the NRA and the White House Prayer Breakfast Fellowship Group, all of these. I mean, is that what you think that Mueller is working on? That, in other words,
yes,
we'll get the big picture at some point or other? Because it seemed to me that Putin had so much redundancy in his influence over the American election that if you even look at just at one component, say that Jill Stein, she basically got more votes than Hillary Clinton in those three key states that she lost by. So on her own, that component of the broader Russian plan was enough to get Trump over the top. So it feels like there were all kinds of tentacles of this operation. Is that your impression?
Yeah, but it is. But I'm also very concerned about overinflating Russian capabilities and what they actually did. What I see, my starting point is this, is that, again, Russia's ideology and Russia's stance towards the United States is that we constitute their premier threat. They see, and so, and as a result, everything that they do from diplomacy to military to intelligence is aligned to hurt the United States. The 2016 elections just simply offered an opportunity to continue on with their ideology. So the starting point for me is that Russia views us as their main adversary. That's it. So when we start kind of delving down, I don't believe that the 2016, you know, was something where they tried to, at the outset, was something to install Donald Trump as president. Rather, I think they were simply looking to harm the United States. So when you start with that premise and you start looking at the tentacles, there are some things that I believe are likely, and there's some things that I think that are probably unlikely. I think that Russia is also incredibly uneasy about direct confrontation. Look, the reason that they did this through intelligence operations, the reason that, as you're saying, will a clear roadmap come forward, is that that's part of the Russians' design. When you run an intelligence operation, you do so for two reasons. One is to carry out the mission, but two is to make sure that it remains clandestine. That is to say that even if it is discovered, in many cases, an operation, you're not even aware that you're the victim of it. But if you are, the ability to make attribution next to impossible. So those are the two things, is the mission and non-attribution. And I think the Russians really carefully planned this out to avoid direct attribution, because they know that that could have risked escalation. When you understand that, then the possibility of them doing certain things, such as changing votes, such as actually attacking systems, that would have changed the nexus considerably in terms of our response. What we're talking about here so far is really traditional espionage activity, stealing stuff, gaining access, trying to influence. And frankly, this is nothing different in terms of tactics than they've done since the Cold War. The difference here is they did it in a very, very aggressive manner, and then they did so with the intent to, frankly, interfere with the presidential election, something I don't believe they've ever done before.
Well, clearly, after he annexed Crimea and started a war with Ukraine and got sanctioned, Putin turned to this form of hybrid warfare as a response. And my sense is that Absolutely. The meeting with Trump was all about, since it was all done in secret, was basically he's trying to find a way, whether or not he owns Trump or not, I don't know, but he's trying to find a way to basically say, you know, I'll stop what I'm doing when you guys take the sanctions off. And that it's a straightforward kind of blackmail, if you will. But when you talk about the tentacles, the fact that they hacked the DNC and the email of Hillary Clinton's campaign manager, along with her servers as well, I find it impossible to believe that that extremely valuable information that you would have as a campaign, knowing exactly what the opposition is doing in real time, that never ended up in the hands of the Trump people. Why would the Russian military intelligence hack the DNC if they weren't going to hand that product over?
You're exactly right, that there's a level of what I call targeting data here. But just to be very clear, when the special counsel says hacking, what I take that to be, and he goes into great care in describing what that is. And in terms of hacking for him, that is gaining access to the systems of U.S. persons and entities, and then stealing information and then distributing it without permission. I want to make clear that that is the definition of what is done in espionage. You break into systems, you steal stuff. The difference here is that it was used and given to a third party. The Russians were very, very careful about, you know, whether it be WikiLeaks or the DNC leaks that they actually ran, but they were very, very careful about how they gave it. They didn't want attribution back to them. That's why they used cutouts like WikiLeaks. But you're absolutely right, and I think that's going to be a large basis for this conspiracy. Was this information used by those in the Trump circle? Was it given to them? And if it was, listen, the Russians don't give anything for free. They would have had to have given it to someone with the understanding they were going to get something back. There had to be some discussion. So this is really where this is going, and this is why I think, you know, I'm very confident that at the end of the day there are going to be indictments against Americans, specifically for things that you've laid out. But again, it's just important to understand that when it comes to the Russian threat, you know, this is not a cyber attack. This is the tools of espionage being used in a very different manner, but espionage nonetheless.
Well, Naveed Jamali, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
You got it.
And again, I've been speaking with Naveed Jamali, who's a senior fellow in the program on national security at the Foreign Policy Research Institute, who spent 3 years as a civilian double agent with the FBI, then joined the U.S. Navy as a reserve intelligence officer, where he continues to serve. He's a regular contributor to MSNBC and The Daily Beast, and he's the co-author of How to Catch a Russian Spy, The True Story of an American Civilian Turned Double Agent. We're going to take a brief station break. We're back examining the efforts by Maria Butina to infiltrate a secret Christian political group of American Christian nationalists.